This is Space Kate, and I have made it on my Space Nomad adventure to NASA Ames, I think perhaps the coolest of all of the NASA centres. And I'm here with Dr. Chris McKay, astrobiologist, and reason that I started all of this crazy space stuff in the first place. So I kind of thank you for that. My bank manager probably doesn't, but I've had a great time. So
good, good. Welcome to Ames.
Thank you. And this is the first time I've ever been in your office, and it's kind of like an Aladdin's cave of books, equipment, rock samples, pens, paper, posters, wires, and these filing cabinets over here, which have got the best signs on them I've ever seen. Antarctica and Arctic is the top one. Deserts is the second one. Then we get up to Mars science and Mars future. What is in the Mars future drawer?
Well, the future drawer is my favorite drawer because that drawer, unlike all the others, involves choice. The future will involve us. We will decide what we do on Mars, whether it will be a world with biology once again or not, whether humans will go there. So the future is the interesting drawer. That's the drawer. It's on the bottom because, in a sense, all the other drawers feed into that drawer. The reason I study the Antarctic and deserts and Mars is so that we can make informed decisions about the future. And that's why the future is right there.
And what kind of future do you think we'll have involving Mars?
Well, I'm a big fan of life. Some of my best friends are alive. And the reason I think Mars is so interesting to us is because of the connection to life. A lot of people understand that Mars has a planet that may have had life in the past, and that's scientifically interesting. But even more interesting is the question of what are we going to do in the future? Will we bring Mars back to life? If we find the remnants of biology on Mars, will we reconstruct it? If there is no biology on Mars, will we share the biology from Earth? So the question of life and biology and the future on Mars is all wrapped together.
And if we do happen to find life on Mars or signs that there has been life on Mars, do you think we then need to be a bit careful about, you know, some people want to see humankind go and take over Mars and live there. If there's already some life form there, do we need to be a bit careful and sort of protect it, you know, keep it like a kind of national park?
I think we do need to think deeply about what do we do in the event that we go to Mars and find a second genesis of life, a different type of life. If we go to Mars and find life that's related to ours, well, then they're our cousins. We just move right in. But if we go to Mars and find life that is really a second genesis, different type of life, then we have several options. And you could characterize them as, well, we could kill it, just move in and trample on them. The other is, well, we could ignore it. We can quarantine it. We don't go there. They don't come here. We ignore it. The third is we could help it. And that's an interesting concept. And obviously, you can tell by my choice of words, that's the one that I like. That presupposes that we know what that Martian life needs to be helped, and we can understand that it's in need of help. And I think the answer to both those questions will turn out to be yes, although we have to investigate it in much more detail. The reason I say it's yes is because we look at Mars. If there's life, it's not covering the whole planet. That means it's not doing as well as it could. And secondly, we look at Mars and we see a planet where the fundamental resources for life are the same as Earth, which means it's highly likely that if there's life on Mars, it's going to like the same things we like on Earth, Snickers bars. And so we know what it likes, and we know it's not doing well. So my position is that if we find life on Mars, most likely, after studying it, we'll decide that it needs our help and we can help it. And I think that's a great thing. There's very few things we're going to do in this universe that are as wonderful as helping another planet's life forms spread and become a global biosphere the way we have it on Earth. I think that would look great on our collective resume. When we finally do meet aliens and they say, well, what have you done? We can say, we met the neighbors. They weren't doing so good. We helped them restore their planet. That sounds a lot better than we met the neighbors and we killed them.
Yeah, I did notice amongst all your books about Mars and Einstein Simplified, you actually have a whole shelf full of books over there on ethics. So how important do you think it is to be thinking about these problems now and having the conversations now before we discover life?
Well, the questions of environmental ethics when we discover life on Mars are important, and they do have implications about what we do now, particularly in the way we explore. and that is we don't want to do anything on Mars that we can't undo. We don't want to contaminate Mars in an irreversible way, because if we do discover that there's life on Mars and we do discover that it's a second genesis, we will want to remove any contamination from Earth. And there is contamination from Earth on Mars now. We know that. We stopped sterilizing spacecraft after Viking. So there's Earthlings on Mars, but they're dormant and they're held within the spacecraft and they're just sitting there. If we discover a Martian genesis, we could, without too much difficulty, go back to those sites and uncontaminate Mars. Or to use the computer metaphor, the undo option is still available on Mars. And my point is that when we think through these environmental ethics issues, we realize that we always want to keep that undo option available. And again, going back to the computer metaphor, my computer warns me before I do something that can't be undone. It says, do you really want to do this action? You can't undo this. And that's a very comforting thought, and I think we should think in Mars the same way. Everything we do on Mars, we should ask ourselves, could we undo this if we had to? So far, the answer has been yes. That's not the basis of our policy right now, but I think it should be. And to be more specific, I argue that our exploration of Mars should be done in such a way that is biologically reversible. And if we follow that approach, then if we do discover Martian life, we can reverse the contamination. If we don't discover Martian life, or if we discover there is no life on Mars, then that contamination is not a problem. We don't need to spend the money to reverse it. In fact, it's not a problem. It's a feature. It's inoculum. It's the seeds of our shared biosphere on Mars. So the discussion of environmental ethics and how we treat Martian life when we discover it does actually work back into implications on how we do the missions we're doing now, missions like MSL, which just landed on Mars. That mission was not sterilized, but its contamination would be reversible.
Do you ever worry that, I mean, that's assuming that we find life that we can recognize as life when we're looking for it. What if we're sort of exploring Mars and we think that it's clear because we haven't found anything that we recognize currently to be a life form, but then later on we think we find something that we identify as a kind of different type of life, you know, based on different chemicals. Could we cause a problem there, or is it just not likely we would find life like that?
Well, this is a big concern, and it traces back to the fact that we only have one example of life, and that's the life on Earth. All life forms on Earth have the same genetic and biochemical machinery. So we have to be very cautious about extrapolating and saying we know what to expect, because we have only one example. But having said that, when we look at Mars, we see an environment that is very much like Earth. The liquid there is water, the carbon source is CO2, the energy source is sunlight. So it's probable that life there will behave a lot like life on Earth. So my guess is that life on Mars is going to be more recognizable to us than just about anywhere else. If we were talking about life on Pluto or something more exotic or in the seas of Titan, then yeah, that's so different from Earth that life there may be so alien that we don't even recognize it. But one of the reasons our focus is on Mars is because it is so Earth-like. So probably life there would be recognizable to us. But your caution is an important one, and it's one that we have to keep in mind. When we only have one example, we can't be sure of what we're looking for or what we're seeing. And we have to keep that in mind all the time as we move forward.
And since, unfortunately, we're not currently on Mars ourselves, I know that you do a lot of travelling. I'm always very jealous of your trips to Antarctica, to Gobi Deserts, to... Is there a desert on this planet that you've not visited?
No, but they sound very exciting, but living in dirt, eating dirt, and not taking a shower for months is not my first choice of a career path. I just have to do that because that's the only way we get to investigate these Mars-like environments. But officially, we're not having fun. We're there working hard.
Well, can I ask you, I see you have a bag on the table, China Rock 2. What is this, and why is it of any interest?
These are rocks from the Gobi Desert in northern West China, and they're quartz rocks, and underneath the bottom underneath the rock, there's this layer of green. And these are desert cyanobacteria, small microscopic photosynthetic organisms living on the light that comes through the rock. The rock is acting like a little greenhouse, holding in moisture but letting light come in. And these organisms live in it. And these organisms are my favorite earthlings because they represent the desert limit of photosynthesis. When we go to drier and drier deserts, we lose the trees, then we lose the bushes. But as we get into a desert that's so extreme that it looks like it's totally barren, we still find these guys growing under the rocks, photosynthesizing. And photosynthesis is fundamentally important because it's the basis of an ecosystem. If you don't have some organism making food, then all the other organisms that eat each other can't survive. Somebody's got to be at the base of the food chain, and that's usually photosynthetic organisms. So this is part of a broad investigation that we're doing, trying to understand the limit of photosynthesis in dry environments. That obviously has implications for Mars. There's only one desert on Earth where we think it's so dry that even these guys can't survive, and that's in the Atacama in Chile. That's the driest desert on Earth. Here in China, in the Gobi, these guys are perfectly happy. They're growing. So we're trying to understand how they get distributed on the, around the world, what's the limit of their ability to survive, and then try to extrapolate that knowledge to Mars.
So when you bring these rocks back with you, is that just because you like to have a souvenir of your holiday, or do you actually do some tests on it now you've brought it back here?
Well, both. I like to have a souvenir of the holiday, but I keep a sample.
I didn't mean holiday. Sorry, of your very intense working trip.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes I collect the rocks without having a specific purpose in mind. But often then some experiments occur to us, and then having the rock makes it easy to do it. Like, for example, for many, many years I collected samples from every desert in the world. So I had samples literally from all over the world. And then I met a guy from Hong Kong who was a geneticist, and he said, well, if you give me those rocks, I will compare the genetics of all these same organism all over the world, and we'll see how they relate to each other. So I put them all in a box, shipped them to Hong Kong, and we got a wonderful publication out of that. So even though I don't always know what science I'm going to do with the rocks, I know that they're going to be interesting and useful in the course of our investigation. So whenever I go to a desert, I pick up a couple of these colonized rocks and bring them back. The immediate goal I had in this was to look at how light transmits through the rock. But I always pick up some extra ones because it's easier to bring back a few extras than it is to go back and get more when you suddenly realize you need more. Be the same thing on Mars. If you go, grab a few extra rocks because you never know what you're going to think to do with them later on that you haven't thought of at the time.
And do you ever worry that you're contaminating your office? Or if we brought back samples from Mars, that we might bring some contamination back to Earth?
On coming back from Mars, we should worry about that because it's not easy for rocks and dirt from Mars to get to Earth. But for example, these rocks from China come from a desert, and the wind blows on that desert, and the dust from that desert has been shown to get carried all the way here to California. So these organisms are being naturally transported all over the world.
Is that what you tell them at customs?
That's right. What I tell them at customs is these are rocks. Pay no attention to the green stuff on the bottom.
Wow. And just a couple of questions, because Mars Science Laboratory just landed. Yeah. We've had a couple of pictures back, which are completely incredible, seeing those. How excited are you about Curiosity being on Mars, and what do you think we'll find from that?
I'm very happy that Curiosity landed successfully. I'm involved in two of the instruments, and in particular, I would like to see the organic instrument detect organics, and I'm pretty sure it will, based on our analysis of the Phoenix results and the Viking results. I think there are organics in the soil on Mars, so in a month or two, when that rover scoops up some dirt and sticks it in the instrument, we're going to finally have good, solid detection of organics on Mars. Now, that's not life. Organics is what life is made out of, but finding organics doesn't mean we found evidence for life, because it could well be the case that the organics on Mars are coming in with meteorites. We see that on Earth. So the next step is, after we find the organics, being able to tell where they came from.
And how do you think that people on Earth, like just people around the world, when they read newspaper reports, which are probably going to be overinflated, about what has and hasn't been found, do you think there's going to be a huge philosophical problem for people?
I don't think there's going to be a huge philosophical problem. There's going to be a huge confusion. When we find organics on Mars and we headline, say, organics on Mars, they probably will say, evidence for life. And people will rush to the conclusion that organics means life. And we will patiently try to explain it, but it will probably be a difficult task. We'll need good reporting by folks like you to get the story out that, yes, this is exciting, but we're not quite yet at life.